You're listening to the Hudson River, a weekly half-hour program about the nature, culture, and beauty of one of America's great waterways. The Hudson River is produced at Vassar College and brought to you in cooperation with this radio station. I'm your host, Mark Breslov. Coming up, we speak with Robert H. Boyle, the author of The Hudson River, A Natural and Unnatural History, about the ecology of the river. Storyteller Jonathan Kruk tells us the Native American myth about how the Hudson was created. And we listen to a recording made at the very source of the river, Lake Tear of the Clouds. All this and more next on the Hudson River. Like a river, everything must have a beginning, and here it is. On this week's Hudson River Culture segment, storyteller Jonathan Kruk of Cold Spring, New York, tells a Native American creation myth of how the Hudson River began.
Mahikanituk. Once upon a time, long before these times, there slept an enormous giant. So long had the giant slept, against his sprawling body there formed a lake. So long had the giant slept, the lake drew animals. Bear, beaver, deer, raccoon, mink, muskrat, and even mastodon. Long the giant slept. People followed the animals. Whenever their arrows left the bow, an animal fell, ready to feed and clothe the people living by the giant's lake. Long the giant slept. The people found they could take the three sisters in their hands and toss them into the giant's lands, and then, sitting, watching, they could see Sister Corn grow straight, while Sister Bean twined round Sister Corn, and Sister Squash would spread about their feet on the ground. Long the giant slept. The people gave the giant thanks every morning at sunrise. The people spent their winters telling tales of times when the giant wrestled with the thunder beings and played tricks on the spirit beings, the manitous, living about. Long the giant slept. It happened slowly. No one person saw, but the giant changed. Trees sprouted from his toes. Rock and moss began covering his legs. His body turned stony. The giant's arms gouged valleys, which flowed with streams. His hair grew into fields of flowers, and his head hardened into an enormous boulder. And children swam in water pooled in the giant's eyes. Long the giant slept. Some people began to wonder, where was the giant? Soon they said, he's just a mountain. We give a mountain no thanks. Then only the grandmothers told the giant's story. And after that, no one told the giant's tales. Without thanks, without stories, crush, the giant's heart broke. Crack! The giant reached his arm then up into the sky and cracked a hole through it. Standing, rocks and trees fell snapping, while streams came tearing out of his eyes. No longer did the giant sleep. Up he had stood. The lake then roared through the giant's legs into an ancient riverbed. Raging, the water washed away those forgetful people, pushing them into the ocean until only a few survived. The lake became a river, pushing the ocean. The ocean pushed back. The people called this ever-moving water Mahikanituk, the river that flows both ways. The people made a new life along Mahikanituk. It was a harder life, but every morning they turned their faces to the sun in thanks. They are the Wappinger people. Now they said the giant went off to sleep again. No one knows where, though. Perhaps he went to the land of the bark-eaters, the Adirondacks, or maybe to the Antieras, the Catskills, or perhaps to the place of the thick, tangled wood, the Taconic. Wherever he is, the giant is mindful of his Hudson, of his Mahikanituk, the river that flows both ways. Indeed, we now call it the river Hudson. And if we take care to keep it clean, it will take care of us. We don't need to wake the giant again, do we? Mahikanituk. I now tie up this tale.
On this week's Hudson River feature, Robert H. Boyle, author of The Hudson, A Natural and Unnatural History, gives us a broad overview of the ecology of the river. Mr. Boyle writes about fishing and other topics for Sports Illustrated and was a founder of both the Hudson River Foundation and what is now called Riverkeeper. So why is the Hudson so darn important?
Well, the Hudson is important because it is the only major estuary on the Atlantic coast of the United States that still retains all of its original fish species. Historically and at present, it has served as a Noah's Ark to replenish stocks or to introduce species to systems elsewhere that have been devastated, going from to the Columbia River with shad, to the Kennebec River in Maine with striped bass in recent decades, and the Susquehanna River in Maryland with shad. It's a very resilient river, and it makes a very important contribution to the fisheries of the Atlantic coast. Along with the Hudson, the Delaware, the Connecticut, the rivers flowing into Chesapeake Bay, rivers to the south, make the east coast of the United States, the continental shelf, the greatest fishing ground the world has ever known.
So it's important from an economic standpoint?
It's important from an economic standpoint. It's important from the point of view of nature. The Hudson, when I said it's the only river on the Atlantic coast of the United States to still retain all of its original spawning species, it's only one of a handful for which this can be said in the entire North Atlantic basin, and I'm throwing in the Black Sea and the Mediterranean Sea when I say that. Ever since, about 1900 on, and then in the accelerated period after World War II, so many estuaries, so many productive rivers that flow to the sea have been damaged by pollution, by dams, by water extraction, that they are just mere shadows of their former self. That includes the Volga, the Danube, the Rhine. But the major river systems, the major estuaries of the Northern Hemisphere have just been devastated.
Now, a Doubting Thomas or Annie could say, so what? I mean, some fish, some fishermen, why should I care about that?
Well, we owe the fish a certain amount of respect. Where the Hudson has suffered in its losses has been the loss of its shell fishery. It used to be considered to be the greatest oyster grounds in the world were around New York Harbor. They were silted over. They were polluted. Now there's going to be an attempt to bring them back. But that's where we've had a loss. But we haven't had a loss with the fish species themselves. The other thing about the Hudson that's extraordinary is that the New York Harbor and the Lower Hudson have, so far as anyone has been able to determine, the greatest change in sea surface temperatures of any body of water in the world in the course of a year. The Hudson can go from, I think salt water freezes at 30.5 degrees Fahrenheit, can go from that into the 80s, and there is nowhere that I know of in the world where you have a 50 degree or more Fahrenheit swing in temperature. Doesn't happen.
So what accounts for that?
The position of the Hudson. The Hudson is the southernmost spawning river for two species that could be considered northern species, the tom cod and smelt. And it is the northernmost river for a number of tropical fishes that visit it, such as Jack Crevalles. It's in a unique position, moreover, geographically on the coast, on the East Coast, because if you look at a map of the East Coast, it goes pretty much straight up from Georgia up through the Carolinas, Virginia. You have the opening of Chesapeake Bay, of course, But aside from the opening to the Chesapeake and the opening to the Delaware Bay, it's pretty much of a straight shoreline until you hit New York. And then Long Island extends out to the east. And New York Harbor sort of can be likened to the pocket in a catcher's mitt. Offshore, you have the Gulf Stream transporting organisms that it has captured, if you will, or entrained to the south. The Gulf Stream is not a cohesive unit. Cells of the Gulf Stream break off, and those cells will often come into New York Harbor and into the Hudson River. And so in the summer months, you will find a number of tropical species that enter the Hudson. The mangrove snapper, its native range is from the Florida Keys south to Bahia, Brazil, in this hemisphere. It is the only fish species that has ever been taken from both the Hudson and the Congo rivers. So you see the Hudson, fish are to the Hudson what people are to New York in diversity. It's a good match. We've also had cod. Cod have been taken in the Hudson River, and they're very much of a northern fish species. So as much as New York is a great mixing ground for people, the Hudson River, the Hudson Estuary, is an incredible mixing ground for fish.
What else accounts, though, for that temperature variation? Is it topography?
Well, currents play a role. For example, off the coast of Maine and New England, the Labrador Current, which is cold, keeps things at a fairly equitable level. The waters never heat up that much. But let me say this. The Hudson is really two rivers, if you will, or two systems. That's a better way of putting it. The river that flows only one way downhill, that and its tributaries, that originates in the Adirondacks, whether it's the main stem of the Hudson coming down from the Adirondacks or the Mohawk coming from the west, which originates in the Adirondacks with West Canada Creek, that system just flows downhill. When you get to Troy, which is about half the length of the river, the total length of the rivers, the whole Hudson system from New York City, the Battery, up to Lake Tyr, the Clouds, the highest permanent source of the Hudson in the Adirondacks, that total length is 315. So you can roughly figure that half of it flows one way, the other half from Troy south to New York is a tidal estuary. It's not a river per se, it's sort of a shoestring version of Chesapeake Bay, but it is very different from Chesapeake Bay in that it is naturally stronger, if you will. There's a lot of limestone and dolomite in the Hudson Valley itself, and that helps to put muscles in the system. It helps to resist the impacts of acidification from atmospheric deposition. This pH of the Hudson, the chemistry of the Hudson, anyone who has an aquarium will tell you that fish generally like, there's some fish that like acid waters, but generally fish, crayfish, aquatic insects, like water that's alkaline. So we have the pH of the Hudson, of the tidal river, the tidal estuary from New York to Troy, is generally a very healthy, sustainable pH because it flows through areas that have limestone and dolomite. Contrast this to the upper Hudson, the Adirondacks, which have been heavily glaciated and have very little reserves of alkalinity. And that's where you get an acid rain problem in the lakes and streams in the upper part of the Hudson system. You don't get that down in the lower Hudson, except in the higher elevations of the Hudson Highlands at an elevation of 800 feet or more, where the Hudson Highland peaks were heavily glaciated, and it's sort of bare rock with very little buffering capacity against acidification.